Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4. Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. Text number 41. Kwachet ut pulakas tushnin nim. Aste samsparsha nivritaha. Aspanda pranayananda. Salila Miklik Tekshanaha Kvachit. Sometimes Utpulaka with the hairs of his body standing on end. Tushnim, completely silent. Aste remains. Sansparsha Nirita, feeling great joy by contact with the Lord. Aspanda, steady. Pranaya Ananda, due to transcendental bliss from a relationship of love. Shalila, filled with tears. Amilita, half closed. Ikshanaha, whose eyes? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes, feeling the touch of the Lord's lotus hands, he became spiritually jubilant and remained silent. His hair is standing on end, and tears gliding down from his half-closed eyes because of his love for the Lord. Purport. When a devotee feels separation from the Lord, he becomes eager to see where the Lord is. And sometimes when he feels pangs of separation, tears flow incessantly from his half-closed eyes. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastika, Yugayetam Mishena Chakshusha Pravrishayetam. The words Chakshusha Pravrishayetam refers to tears falling incessantly from the devotee's eyes. These symptoms, which appear in pure devotional ecstasy, were visible in the body of Prahlad Maharaj. Text 42. Because of his association with perfect, unalloyed devotees who had nothing to do with anything material, Prahlad Maharaj constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus feet. By seeing his bodily features when he was in perfect ecstasy, persons very poor in spiritual understanding became purified. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj bestowed upon them transcendental bliss. Purport. Apparently, Prahlad Maharaj was placed in circumstances in which he was always tortured by his father. In such material conditions, one cannot have an undisturbed mind. But since bhakti is unconditional, ahaituki yapatiyata, Prahlad Maharaj was never disturbed by the chastisements of Hiranyakashipu. On the contrary, the bodily symptoms of his ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead turned the minds of his friends, who had also been born in atheistic families. Instead of being disturbed by the torments of his father, Prahlad influenced these friends and cleansed their minds. A devotee is never contaminated by material conditions, but persons subjected to material conditions can become spiritually advanced and blissful upon seeing the behavior of a pure devotee. Do all devotees equally have the power to purify others? Or is there some special gift Krishna gives? So when you look at someone, they become purified. What is the difference? When Maharaj Vidura came back after pilgrimage for around 30 years or so, he came back to Hastinapur to actually instruct his brother, Dhritarashtra, who by now had become quite old. Vidura had left practically right before the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And even in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it is estimated that Krishna was around 120 years old, which is pretty good longevity for nowadays. And 30 years later, Vidura comes back after pilgrimage. And Maharaj Yudhisthira greets him with the words, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kuravanti Tirthani Swantakstena Katabritaha. So Bhavan, very much yourself, my dear sir, Vidas Bhagavatas. So persons like yourself, wherever they go, more or less, he's Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibha. Wherever they go, they turn that place into a place of pilgrimage. So why we go to a place of pilgrimage, it doesn't turn into a place of pilgrimage. Did he have a special pilgrimage stamp, and wherever he went, he stamped the place and it became a place of pilgrimage? He had contact with some tourist agents and he made arrangements that these places became places of pilgrimage, like Disneyland and other such places. There are two types of places of pilgrimage, as we've heard from the Bhagavatam. Yadvichas chitra pitam hariyari sho jagat pravita pravriha karhi chit Tadvaya samtirita usanti manasa niyatrahangsa niramanti shikshaya. Everyone has their place of pilgrimage. I don't know in Ljubljana where there's the places of pilgrimage. Are there places of pilgrimage with tourist sites? Usually not, nowadays it's tourist sites. Even they go to some supposedly holy place, sacred place, it's usually as a tourist, takes selfies there, so they can send it back to their friends so they can become envious. Wish you, we're glad you're not here. When I grew up, the main place of pilgrimage in America was Disneyland. You had a queue, heaps of pious credit to be able to make a pilgrimage to Disneyland. At first, it was only on the West Coast. And every child was praying, not to God, but to their father and mother. Please, let's go to this place of pilgrimage. We can see the sacred deities. We heard that in the Vedic culture, some of the deities that look unusual. So here also the deities look unusual. One of them had big black ears, super big ears. Another one looked like a duck. The duck incarnation. Duck avatar. And there was a great desire to go there, to such a place of pilgrimage. Other people, a little bit more normal, the main place of pilgrimage was the Empire State Building, the tallest building in the world. So if you were pious, you could touch the Holy Land of America. Then you could become elevated up to the 110th floor. If you went to the Empire State Building, the highest elevation that man had to offer at that time. But then everyone who was elevated had to come down. No one could stay there permanently. Haruruk Shiktena Padam Padam Pada Pashantanya Nadrita Yushmat Angraya. So pilgrimage is always there, but there are two types of pilgrimage. For the Vayasam, Vayasam means crows, and for the Hungsas, the swan-like devotees. We have to choose what kind of pilgrimage we want to take. Do we want to go to the place where the crows are and eat the garbage? Or do we want to go to the swans, where the swans are? Nice, peaceful lakes with those lotus flowers. That's what we have to choose. Now, generally, our minds are trying to encourage us to take the garbage. And the garbage has a lot of advertisement behind it. The newspapers, the radio, the movies, the educational system. It's all encouraging people to become crows and eat as much garbage as possible. But for those who get tired of the garbage, then they can try to become like a hamsa, a swan, and find a peaceful place to chant Hare Krishna. And what would be the value? The value is that, like Vidura, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas, Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho, Tirtha Kauravanti Tirthani. Then we can begin to change normal places into places of pilgrimage. And why? Swantak Stena Katavrata. Because we can carry Krishna within our heart. There's a television within our heart. Unfortunately, it's broken. At least the channel is broken. We can't tune in to channel Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. It's limited to some rock station. It's the only channel we can tune into. So we have to repair the television set so we can tune in to channel Krishna. And it begins with hearing about Krishna. Just as like every other channel, we're attracted to it due to hearing. Everything in the material world is based upon hearing the glories of something. Hearing, we get some jnana, and then we want to get vijnana. We want to experience it. Just like Krishna consciousness, we can go on hearing, but unless we practice what we've heard, then we won't get any experience. You can hear the glories of eating a mango coming from India, but unless you get one of those mangoes and taste it, it's all theoretical. You can't eat a meal theoretically. Today we're going to have a big feast. We're going to sit here and meditate, and I'm going to serve out the preparations in your minds by telling you about them. So we hope you enjoy. Unfortunately, there won't be any prasadam today. So you'll have to be satisfied with mental prasad. So some people are advanced enough, they could actually experience that, but most of us aren't. So we're hearing theoretically, but then we have to find out what is the means of experiencing what we've heard. So we should know the goal is to actually experience Krishna, to become eligible, to be in the same mood as Krishna. In order to actually experience Krishna, we have to be in his same mood. Just like to enter into fire, one has to become like fire, otherwise you'll get burned. There are residents of the sun planet, they never get burned because their bodies are made out of fire. You can't burn fire. Similarly, there are residents in the water, like the fish, they don't drown because they're one with the water. In the same way, if you put an iron into the fire, then it gets hotter and hotter and hotter until it becomes like fire. And then wherever you touch the iron, it burns. The iron burns something. Similarly, if we want to experience Krishna, we have to become like Krishna. But becoming like Krishna also means we have to think about Krishna, because we can't become like Krishna without having Krishna's association. Now the question is, what are the obstacles in our association with Krishna? The main obstacle, as Prahlad Maharaj said, is the uncontrolled mind. And where does that say that in Bhagavad Gita? The Bhagavad Gita scholars here. Sixth chapter, we've narrowed it down. There are 10 billion verses and we've got to the Bhagavad Gita. And now we know it's the sixth chapter and there's 47 verses. I think of 46. What? Okay. We're getting warmer. Is it bigger than a bread box? Okay, Adi Purushuru.
Mine is the best friend and the worst enemy.
Yes. Udarad Atmanatmanam. Atmanam Avasetayat. Admaiva Yatmano Bandura Admaiva Ripur Atmanaha. Pandoratmatmanastasya, enaivatmatmana jita, anatmanastu shatrudve, varte tatmaiva shatrudva, jitatmana prasantatma, paramatma samahita, shitoshna sukadukeshu, tatamana pamanayo. A man has to elevate himself by his own mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, and for one who has failed to do so, becomes his greatest enemy. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. For such a person, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, all the same. So the question is, how are we arranging our lives? To agitate our minds, or to think about Krishna? Are we actually aware of where our minds are even going? Or are we just, wherever our minds go, we gladly take the journey with it. See what new interesting places our minds can go to. It's called Manorite Nasati Davido Bahi Pantastu Koti Vatsara Sampragamyo Vayuratapi Manaso Munipungavanam Sopyasi yat prapada simya pi chintya tatve govindam adi purusham tamahang vijami. Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says that the yogis, they're drilling their respiration. And they're also pantastikoti shatavatsara sampragamyo vayuratapi manaso munikupungavanam. But how much they drill their respiration, or try to, by mental exercise, obtain Vishnu, Krishna, all they get is up to the tip of the toe of his lotus feet. Not quite even to the toenail. After millions of years of drilling the respiration. Because Krishna is only obtained by service, by pure devotional service. Unless one is interested in pure devotional service, there's no way of obtaining Krishna. We can't, by our strength of our minds, think about Krishna. We can, but we will not feel Krishna. We cannot force Krishna to come within our minds and expect Krishna is going to come there and surrender to us. The little tiny 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size is going to conquer someone who's unlimited. But Krishna is conquered by the process of devotional service, beginning with jnane priyasana udpasta namanta eva. Jnane priyasa udpasta namanta eva. Almost always, priyasa. Jnane priyasa udpasta namanta eva. So the first qualification is to give up mental speculation. In other words, we have so much mental speculation, we're not even aware of how we're speculating. We think when my mind is not wandering to a million different places, then I'm actually not speculating anymore. But actually, we can't help but speculating. Everything we look at is a speculation. because we're in ignorance. Or I should say, as long as we're in ignorance, everything we see is a speculation, because it's not real. We're just seeing it according to the modes of nature, which was situated. We're seeing it according to the imagination that Maya is supplying to us. Now we may say, oh, I'm a helpless victim. Maya is supplying it, and therefore I'm a victim. Maya is actually at fault for my conception of life, because I actually want to be a devotee, but Maya is just torturing me because she doesn't like devotees, especially goes after devotees. And since I'm really trying to become a devotee, she's really after me. No, we don't have to accept what Maya says if we hear from Shastra. Now, we're not going to immediately realize Shastra, everything it says in Shastra. So therefore we hear Shastra and we say, well, it didn't work. Forget it. Let me go back to my mental speculation. I know that works. Then I can get a house, a wife, a color TV. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. Yes, I'll do devotional service, but on my terms. Because Krishna's terms seem a little too difficult. So we have to hear and realize we're in ignorance. Then we'll immediately reject, oh, the body's changing, big deal. So what? What else is new? We heard this a million times. It made no difference in my life whatsoever. It may have changed, but I still got it. Yesterday, prasadam, I'm going to eat it today too. So what's the difference? Whatever body I have, I'm going to eat prasadam. It makes no difference in my life. As long as I can keep on eating prasadam, life is good. So one has to give up this tendency to speculate, which means we can look around and we can see so many things, but we should know what we're seeing is not real. It's our imagination. The only one we actually start remembering how we're supposed to see things, can we start seeing things differently? Actually, we won't see things differently. We can see with the eyes of knowledge and still see exactly the same thing. The difference is how we choose to act. We can see our enemy and decide I should kill them. If not physically, at least mentally. Or I can see my enemy, who I think is my enemy, and I should think, well, how can I make them my friend? How can I change my conception of who I'm dealing with? Are they actually Krishna's servants? Or does Krishna have some servants who are actually demons? Yes, everyone is Krishna's servants, but there's a few who don't like me who are demons. Krishna likes variety. So some of his servants are devotees and some of them are demons. So we have to change our conception of things. And if we act according to the scriptural conception, then Gyane Priyasamunupasana Manteva Jivanti Sanmukaritam Bhavadiyavartam. The example of like devotees like Prahlad, our acharyas, our mahatmas, if we act according to their example, we serve them like a menial servant, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita. Then the result is Stane sita shudigatam tanuvangmano bira. We don't have to change anything. Believe it or not, in this age, men don't have to become women to make spiritual advancement. And women don't have to become men. Or something in between, which is more common nowadays. There's no need to change our position. But we do have to hear from the Shruti, from the scriptures, and then agree to engage our body, our mind, and our words in Krishna's service. And they priyasam jita jitos taistri lokyam. then Krishna will agree to appear before us, to reveal himself before us. We conquer Krishna by submissive hearing from the right source and try to the best of our ability carry out Krishna's instructions, try to serve him in spite of whatever difficulties may arise. And when Krishna sees we're sincere, we're tolerant, then he reveals himself to us accordingly. And the result is that one can actually experience Krishna. Not only one can experience Krishna, but Krishna is not experienced exactly in the heart. Krishna is transcendental. And when he comes and appears before the devotee, he's also appearing before everyone else in proportion to their appreciation of that devotee. If one appreciates that devotee, then one can actually experience Krishna as the Krishna is appearing within the heart of that devotee. Not only Krishna, but the entire, well, we could say the entire spiritual world, but at least the spiritual world. Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes are appearing, and when they appear to that devotee, as if much as one feels oneself to be a servant of that devotee, then Krishna will also appear within that devotee's heart. That's called the simple succession. Therefore, I remember being on morning walks with Srila Prabhupada sometimes, and some of the disciples, they appeared that they were very submissive and they were very appreciative of what Prabhupada said, and others seemed to be a little bit more familiar with Prabhupada. And the ones who were appreciative, as far as I remember, they are still in the movement. And those who are a little too familiar with Prabhupada, Krishna took them out for some time. So we have to become receptive to the devotees in order to become receptive to Krishna. Now, of course, Krishna is not in the heart of the person, you may become as receptive as possible. You'll never get Krishna. It's not possible because there's nothing there. But as much as Krishna is in the heart of the devotee and we serve that devotee, now, of course, we don't exactly serve devotees directly. If we're actually properly connected, then we serve the acharyas in disciplic succession. And when we serve devotees, we serve the devotees on behalf of the acharyas. We're an instrument for the acharyas. So one will never be without the association with the acharyas if one actually becomes a servant of the acharyas. Even when one is serving the lowest devotee, or even the lowest living entity, if one is doing so on behalf of the acharyas, then one will actually have the acharyas in their heart, and along with the acharyas, in their name, form, quality, and pastimes of Krishna. Not only that, but in this age, we'll also have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Panchatattva and the disciple succession feeling separation from Krishna. So any service done to the Panchatattva and the acharyas into disciple succession will also put us into the spiritual world, no matter what service we're doing for their mission. Now, associating with them means associate with their mission also. We can't simply try to think about them and not try to engage in their mission, because we have to become their instruments. And then whatever we're doing, like Prabhupada himself, he'd be quoting Bhagavad Gita in his last days when he was appearing. Suraprabhu was telling me that Prabhupada was seemingly unconscious. He was resting for many times. Suraprabhu was assisting Tamakrishna Maharaj, taking care of Prabhupada. It appeared that for periods of time Prabhupada was unconscious. But then Prabhupada would wake up and quote a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. He didn't wake up and say, "Oh, Krishna, where are you? Which bush are behind? Hey, Radhe, Braja Devi ke, Chalalite, hey, Nanda, Shuno, Kutaha." No, Prabhupada would seemingly wake up and quote a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, because that's what he was meditating on. So even when Prabhupada was telling people, "Deno sminita dehe, kamaram yovanam jara," again and again for years, Prabhupada just repeated that we're not this body. Does that mean that Prabhupada needed to hear that he wasn't his body? just to refresh it, the memory of that verse. He kept on quoting it so he wouldn't forget it. No, whatever he was doing appropriately according to his time, place, and audience, and that's what his audience was meant to hear. But when he was quoting it, he was with Krishna on the battlefield Kurukshetra. When he was quoting it, he was with his spiritual master quoting it, and Chaitanya and the whole disciple succession back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was feeling separation from Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So his quoting the verse was not different from being in Vrindavan. Not that he thought all these lowly verses from Bhagavad Gita for the neophytes, the most elementary book that we have, I'm tired of it. Let me turn to the 10th canto and get some relief from this Bhagavad Gita. This boring philosophy. No, actually for him, this Bhagavad Gita was as good as the Rasa dance. So that has to become for us too, if we want to become actually powerful, effective preachers. We have to understand how everything is ultimately connected to Krishna, and Krishna is always connected with the highest mellows if we serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And then we can become like Prahlad Maharaj, and then we'll have an influence of others, and of course we should try to make them favorable towards us. Favorable towards Krishna and Krishna's devotees, so they can become receptive to the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially when we're powerful enough to deliver it. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
One question I have is our philosophy is really full of bliss from stage zero, from the first day. And why do we sometimes have good devotees sleeping in the class?
They're probably tired. It's probably carried over from Neil Jalakadas. They haven't quite recovered. Well, of course, if they're really a good devotee, they're dreaming about Krishna in class. Someone asked Prabhupada, why have all these great devotees fallen? I would say the great devotees don't fall. So we have to be... To us, it's good to think that these devotees are very exalted and that they're dreaming about Krishna in class because they didn't get enough opportunity to dream about Krishna last night. They're taking advantage of class to do it. It's the most very peaceful time of the day. Anything else? Yeah.
Sometimes devotees have very bright experiences in their Krishna consciousness also from even from the early days. Sometimes they are even validated apparently by Srila Prabhupada, who would give very high assessment.
Yeah.
And then after some time we can also see that devotees sort of flag and that they don't get these same experiences. Is that something that a devotee has to do differently to not lose zest?
Well, again, Krishna can appear and he can disappear. It's not necessarily that Krishna has appeared and now I got him. He can't go. I want to go. No, sorry, you know. No, Krishna appears for whatever reason, you know. Our previous experiences in Krishna consciousness, our previous devotional service, so many different factors may be there why Krishna appears. But in general, Krishna appears early on, especially for the yoga brashtas, those who have fallen. You know, because we've been in the material existence for at least for some years, before we come to devotional service, and we become rather dull, almost by the material association. So for Krishna to pick us up where we left off, he sometimes has to give us the taste where we left off on, at least the progress. So that may mean he has to give us some extra encouragement so we can get out of our material slumber and become interested in devotional service again. So he gives us some extra impetus to put us back on the path again. But we may not deserve exactly that state of awareness or experience quite yet as a steady factor. So we have to work, he tries to encourage us to work up to it so it becomes part of our permanent experience. Yes?
If it's not raining and if you go for Harinam today, what's a good meditation for the Harinam to be a part of? When we are part of the Harinam part?
Well, it's good to chant in here. Just here, the holy names. Whatever Krishna appears in your memory in some form or quality or pastime, that's very nice. But I can't tell Krishna how he's going to appear. That's up to him. But if we make ourselves receptive to Krishna, then we'll see how you'll see how Krishna appears. So the best meditation in general, we're there as the servant of the servant of Krishna. And we should try to serve him to the best of our ability.
And how a devotee should best see the people in the streets?
With four arms. But if we can't see them with four arms, we can try to see them as 1/10,000th the size of Tiburin's. And if you can't see that, then don't look at them. I see them, you know, as brothers and sisters who have forgotten the fact that they're part of a spiritual family. And we're going out there to remind them. Anything else? Yes.
About our mind, can you please tell us what practically means to beat our mind 100 times in shoes in the morning?
Well, we're selling some mind shoes outside. They're quite expensive, so. No, it means to become detached. Beating the mind with shoes, for as far as my realization is, means that when the mind presents something which is supposedly nectar, then we should take our mind shoe and beat it so it goes away. Maya comes, oh, I'm here, I'm so beautiful, and I'm here for you. And we take our shoe and we go, whack. And Maya goes, what? What did you do? You go, whack, whack, wait a second. I'm getting out of here. I'm never coming back. Oh, I'm sorry. Get out of here, you rat. So rather than going, oh, Maya is so beautiful. Oh, yes. I surrender to you. No, we take a shoe and we hit her. And then she'll flee away. And don't call her back. Wait a second. I have second thoughts. I'm sorry. I'll never hit you again. I'm sorry. Therefore it says 100 times, then you'll be sure she'll never come back. Anything else? And for the ladies, it's the men, of course. Or if you're in between, it's also in between. Same thing. All right, thank you very much. Karendra Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.